Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 15th of July. Our guest this hour is the author of Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. Professor Sam Gosling is an associate professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin, and his work has been widely covered in the media, the New York Times, Psychology Today, NPR, Good Morning America, and his research is featured in Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. He is the recipient of the American Psychological Association's Distinguished Scientific Award for Early Career Contribution, and this happens to be his first book. He dispatched teams of, well, they've been called scientific snoops, to peek under desks, to shuffle through music collections, to scrutinize Facebook profiles, and to delve into desktop clutter. And you can find in his book Why It's So Hard to Fake the Impression Your Personal Environment Conveys, What Clues to Look For If You Want to Judge Your Boyfriend's or Girlfriend's Reliability, How Architects, this is interesting, Can Use the Science of Snooping to Custom Design Your Home, How Your Stuff Can Predict Who You Will Vote For, in addition to just having a big political sign over your bedroom wall or wherever the heck it might be. He looks at, what he did was formulated a plan. He'd recruit a bunch of volunteers who would vacate their rooms, and when they were gone, he'd send in a team of judges to form an impression of the recently departed purely from evidence of their rooms, and then another team of coders to assess the physical features of the space. And all he could offer the volunteers as an incentive was feedback on how others viewed them on the basis of their rooms. And he found, to his surprise, almost 100 people signed up. And as word of the study got out, others came around begging to be included. So it's really a fun, interesting book. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine that we will have many of them because we all have thoughts about our stuff. And our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Professor Sam Gosling is our guest. Hello, Professor Gosling. Thank you so much for being with us. Oops, I got there. Hi, Professor Gosling.
Hello there. Hello.
Hi, thanks so much for being with us.
Not at all.
Wasn't this a great idea you had?
Well, in some sense it was, but I think in some sense it's a pretty natural thing, because I think all of us are snoops, really, at heart. I think we're all snooping around people's places, but, not always doing it so systematically.
I keep thinking if you looked at my stuff, it would be that, the depression's right around the corner. I got so much stuff that it would be hard for any researcher to go through it. Stuff.
Yeah, well, and there are big differences in how much people have. But I think, it's strange, given that we have so many things in our personal places and our workplaces and all those different, all these different contexts. It's amazing, really, that there hasn't been more research on it, because I think, it's such a sort of a rich source of information about what people are like and what they want to be like.
Right. You talk about the personality consisting of extroversion, emotional stability, openness, conscientiousness, and agreeableness.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that if you go through somebody's bedroom, if you go through their office. Do those personality manifestations manifest themselves in bedrooms?
They do, some of them more strongly than others, and that's one of the sort of the interesting things that we found when we started looking at people's physical spaces. Up until quite recently, people had thought, it's very hard to pick up many of our personality traits. So these, as you mentioned, there are these five broad dimensions of personality. We all have all of them to a greater or lesser extent, but some of them, some of us tend to be more characterized by one trait than another. And so, research had really thought, the only one people can tend to pick up is extroversion. But really, that just reflected the fact that people had only looked in social interactions, in everyday, interactions, where people have an opportunity to express that extroversion. And they thought all the other traits were kind of invisible. But it turns out they were just not looking in the sorts of places where those other traits get expressed. And people's homes and offices are very good places to find out a lot of other things about people, too.
What are the things that are counterintuitive, an impression we may have of somebody because they seem to be extraordinarily tidy or they seem to have a lot of pictures of foreign trips, et cetera, something that might be something we wouldn't think?
Yeah, well, I think one of the interesting things about them is that a lot of these findings, when you know them, they think, oh, well, that makes sense. And it's sort of one of the things I like to do, you know, when I'm giving a talk is often I'll just go ahead and present the findings and people will shrug and say, oh, well, that's obvious. I could have told you that anyway. But that's really 20/20 hindsight vision, because I know when I give talks and I say, okay, here are the five traits. Which ones do you think people will be able to predict? If I ask people to actually make that prediction beforehand, people really have no idea, and you get people guessing all of these traits. So you know, it's one of those things that you can make sense of when you hear it. But actually, if you ask people to go ahead and really, you know, come up with it before they know the findings, it's suddenly not quite so obvious. And this is true not only for things like, you know, our physical spaces and our workspaces, but also things like shaking hands and whether somebody has a firm handshake, what that means, what music they listen to, what their Facebook profile looks like, and so on. So I guess, you know, in terms of a contradict, you know, one of the things that's very surprising, one of the things that people thought they would really be able to pick up on when they went into people's places is how nice they are. It turns out that's very, very hard to pick up in terms of in somebody's space. And one of the interesting things is that people use the wrong clues. They do judge how nice you are. So they go ahead and think, oh, well, this is a nice person. But they're using clues that are actually diagnostic of this other trait known as a conscientiousness. So they're going ahead and making a judgment about how nice you are, but using the wrong clues to do it.
Oh, that's it. So what clues should you be using?
Well, it turns out that for how nice people are, there are pretty few clues in living spaces to it, despite what people think. One of the interesting things is actually if you think about the interaction of people at their workspace, and it turns out, and again, all of the things that, you know, I talk about in the book and I'm talking about today are, of course, generalizations, which
right.
means they generally tend to be true, and we can always find exceptions to them. So, that should definitely be borne in mind in this discussion. But one of the things that we found was that people are lower on this trait of agreeableness, you know, which is what I call the sort of the Mr. Rogers factor, people who are sort of kind, warm, sympathetic, and so on, versus people who are more direct and critical, is that those people in their office spaces, they actually tend to find themselves on the periphery of the office spaces. And I think, you know, there's a mutual process going on here. They tend to not like people, and also they tend, over the course of their tenure at a job, you know, when there comes an opportunity for an office space move, they often get sort of say, hey, why don't you take that office at the end of the corridor? Everybody agrees they should be there. They tend to be more distant.
Interesting. What about tidiness?
Yeah, well, tidiness is very interesting, and you know, it's one of the ones that really shows up in people's spaces. So that was one of the things we assessed for how tidy versus and cluttered, and neat, and organized, all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that as you might expect, that indeed does predict people high on this what in our field is called conscientiousness, but I like to think of it as sort of the air traffic controller factor. That's you know, people who are responsible, they are time oriented, they show up to work on time, they plan, they think ahead, and so it really tends to predict people who have spaces like that. It's also one of the clues that I mentioned earlier that people wrongly use to ascribe how nice people are, the Mr. Rogers factor. You know, but I think one thing that's really important to keep in mind when we talk about tidiness is there's a huge variety of types of tidiness. There's surface tidiness and deep tidiness. So all kinds of, we could have a whole show just on tidiness.
I know we could. And the surface tidiness is something somebody might do, which we all do. Oh, somebody's coming over. I'm going to stuff everything under the bed.
That's right. So once you sort of get into sort of deeper level snooping, you know, you could look at two two, clear, apparently tidy desks. And so that's why what you should always, is always say, well, how structurally deep is this tidiness? So open the desk drawer too. And is the desk drawer, does it have an organizer in there with all the paper clips and the paper clip section and the pencil sharp? Or does it just have actually all of the contents of the desk, which has just been hastily swept from the desk into the top drawer?
Yeah, right. What does your desk look like? What does your working area look like?
Yeah, my working area is a complete mess. I wish it wasn't, but it is. And I think, that really illustrates one of the points here, is that it's much harder to fake this sort of thing than other sorts of things, which is why it's such a key to learning about people. I mean, I don't want it to be messy. I'm not trying to tell the world I'm messy, but I just, when I get something out, I just don't have it in me to put it back where it belongs.
Yeah. And what about being able to discern conservatism or liberalism?
Yeah. Well, it's long been known that political orientations and political values tend to be associated with certain personality traits. And our research has confirmed that. And the personality traits that it's associated with, they tend to show up in people's spaces. So people at the conservative end of the spectrum, they tend to be, again, generalizations, of course, but they tend to be more concerned with order, and they like things, and so they tend to have more orderly, organized spaces. And then people versus liberals, who tend to be more disorganized and order, isn't such an a important factor in the life. And also, combined with the fact that liberals tend to prefer variety and like difference and unconventionality, so there you would tend to see greater evidence for broad interests. You might see that in the music collection, in the book collection, the contents of the books. And the conventionality might be for people of the conservative orientation is expressed by things such as, interests in sort of standard sports, and they often have evidence of sports memorabilia and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Mm. I remember that I tried to, years and years ago, because I live a life of clutter, I got so much stuff around, that I wanted to live in a room. I was a VISTA volunteer in Georgia, and I had this little tiny room, and I wanted to pattern it on Van Gogh's painting. What's the name of that? The room at Arles, or however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
And so I painted it the same color, and it looked like it had a little sink, and it had a little chair and a table, and that was it, and a couple clothes. Thinking, boy, to be able to live like that, you're just going to be so much more serene. You're going to be able to unclutter your mind and know what to do with a day, et cetera. And I got to tell you, though, it felt good for about a year. I lived that way for a year, and I've never returned to that. But it was great.
Yeah, but you couldn't maintain it forever.
You know?
And I think that's one of the points is that I had my own kind of I said I'm going to affect my life and I said okay I'm going to become an organized person. I'm going to get my CDs in order. So I go off to the IKEA and get the little CD cases and organize them all.
Right.
And it was marvelous. My CD collection was beautifully organized with all the jazz in the jazz section and the rock in the rock section and by order, and all the CDs were in the cases, for a day, by the end of that week, I think one of the reasons why it's so hard to fake these spaces, because you really have to live that life in order to have a deeply tidy place, to have the pencil sharp, to have the spare supplies before they run out. You have to live that life. You can't just fake it.
Right. Are you one of these people who buys all these container boxes, too? I have all these container boxes, and then they're filled with you don't even know what's in them, It might be old children's things. But I got a lot of them.
That's why, sort of expert snooping also entails sort of, and it's useful. So even if so I could see two messes, and they might be equally messy, two very messy places. And one of them might have, these container boxes lying around, perhaps unused or an organizational system or files. And the difference here is, though, although both people are equally messy, one of these people at least values organization. They have aspirations to be organized. And that tells you something different about them.
Right. And how difficult is it to change? I mean, once we get you've got these personality patterns and there they are in your space.
Yeah.
Can people switch them quickly or not?
Well, there is some room for change, but frankly, a much more promising strategy is to come to terms with who you are, because it's very, very hard to really change at a deep level, and many of us may wish to, and so on, but it's hard to do because you don't have to just change your behavior, you have to change how you see the world. I mean, we've all had that experience where you're about to go into somebody's house and they say, no, don't come in, it's a terrible mess.
Right.
And you go in, and what they meant was that, that two of the coasters were out of alignment on the table.
Oh, my gosh.
and they're not, and that's not a show. They're not just saying that to create an impression.
Mm.
For them, for people like that, it really feels like order is about to break down. It's on the verge of breaking down. You know, now the coasters, tomorrow, rioting in the streets. You know, for them, it really feels like that. And it's hard to fake that difference in perception.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to do that. My colleague at where I work, her office is immaculate. And I know that if I went into her office and pulled one of the books a quarter of an inch out of the shelf, she wouldn't even be able to focus until that book had been put back.
Goodness.
But you could come into my office and turn all the books on their sides, and I may not notice for 2 weeks. So it's very hard to really change that perceptual difference, too.
Right. Tell us, I can't remember, it was somebody who called you from a reality show, I think, and they had you, they sent you, tell us the story. They sent you a box, you couldn't open it until a certain time.
Yes. Well, there they just wanted to sort of see what you could learn about people from their possessions. So it was for sort of a reality snooping show where I was, meant to try and figure out what people were like from their stuff. So I got the box, and then I had to take things out of it and figure out what the person's like. And you can learn a certain amount by doing that. So, you can see, well, what are the objects? What does this person have? Oh, this person has this type of music, these types of products, these types of photos, and so on. And by looking, and that's what we do when we're snooping, you can also look at the state of them. The state of them is very important because that tells you how it's used. Okay, here is a tube of face cream. Has it been cleaned? Has it been impulsively squeezed from the middle? Has it been carefully squeezed from the end and rolled up and so on? So you can look at the state. That really tells you how it's used. But what it doesn't allow you to look at when you're sent a box is the placement. And the placement is really crucial for telling you the psychological function, whether it's important to this person. I think, one of the most interesting issues of placement is in the desks people, the photos people have on their family desks.
Hmm.
So, do you have, on their office desk, sorry, the photos of family on their office desks. So you're at work and you have a picture of a loved one or a pet or a special place. Or is that facing you, the occupant? Is it really there for you to look at? In which case, it's what we would call a social snack. It's there for you to snack on in the absence of that individual, to be able to just turn and take little doses of that person, essentially. Whereas you could take the very same photo and have it facing outwards, have it facing towards others, and then it's serving a very different function there. What it's doing is it's making a statement about to others, look at me, look at my beautiful spouse, or look at me, here I am, doing this adventurous thing. And that, of course, that doesn't mean it's disingenuous, but it really tells us that the very same object is serving a different function.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about, I can't remember who it was, the gentleman who had a mentor who was very significant and put a picture in a place where he would see him, but not too often.
That's right, yeah. So that was a, that's a classic case of one of these social snacks. So yes, it was another colleague of mine, actually, and he had had this mentor who he admired very much and respected very much, but almost taking medication, he didn't want to have it right in front of him. It would be too overwhelming, too much of that person. So what he did was he pasted his photo, he taped it onto the inside of a cupboard. And in fact, I only noticed it when I saw him one day just opening the cupboard and taking a look. And I said, what's on the inside? What's on that cupboard? And he had the photo on the inside of the cupboard door, which really allowed him just to sort of dip into that photo and take little doses of this guy Ned who was so important to him.
Are people afraid to have you over?
Yes, I get lots of invitations not to come to dinner these days.
I would imagine you might. Let's welcome phone calls. I think we'll have a few. It's a wonderful book. Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. Sam Gosling is our guest. Professor Gosling is an associate professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. He's been widely covered in the press, including the New York Times, Psychology Today, NPR, Good Morning America. And his research is featured in Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. He is the recipient of the American Psychological Association's Distinguished Scientific Award for Early Career Contribution. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, or send an email if you would like, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Professor Sam Gosling is our guest. His book is Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. And we welcome your phone calls. If you want to analyze someone or analyze yourself and tell us about your stuff or talk more about how these facets of our personalities, the five personality traits manifesting themselves in almost every aspect of our daily lives, we certainly welcome your phone calls, and it would be fun to hear about stuff, your stuff, others' stuff. Ed from West Allis, our first caller. Hi, Ed.
Well, I got two pictures of Charlize Theron and a picture of Ebbets Field in my work locker along with a picture of Pete Reiser, so that's what I have.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know that Andy Warhol, even though he's dead, has an entire warehouse of the detritus of society from the late 1940s until his death, just sitting there in New York City. And Kim Basinger had a comment one time on Jay Leno's program when Leno said that he was a messy person. And she said, well, what are you saving that stuff for, your next lifetime? I guess that would get you motivated to get organized.
Professor Gosling?
Yes. Yeah, well, there's a number of interesting things there. Yes, I mean, I think, you know, one of the really interesting classes of people, of course, are these hoarders. And there are many different varieties of hoarders. And I'm not sure, Ed, if the stuff you were referring to was Andy Warhol's stuff himself. But allegedly, he was one of these... hoarders who falls into the brand of a narcissistic hoarder. So many people hoard. They say, well, who knows when I might need this. Some people, you know, think it might be useful one day. But Warhol's brand was really thinking, well, I need to keep everything for my biographers. It's going to be very useful for people in the future. So I think, you know, that's, you know, certainly an interesting a facet that you can find in people's places. And hoarders tend to differ from regular collectors. So people who collect things, they tend to be high on this conscientiousness trait. They like to do it. They like the order. They like the activity of pulling together a collection. Whereas people who hoard, they tend to be higher on neuroticism. They just sort of tend to be anxious and worry about things more. So I think that's... very interesting, but I wish as if Kim Basinger said you could just change what are you keeping for it, but it's so hard. These things are so deeply ingrained. It takes more than a resolution to do so, typically.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ed, very much for the call. We never got to the story of what you found in that box and how you determined about the person's bathroom a little bit about who he was, because you were right on with some of the descriptions of his life.
I was right on with some of the things. Of course, we didn't go very deeply. So, you know, right on in terms of combining things. And I think what it was really interesting about it is it betrays a key snooping lesson, which is really to be very, very careful about interpreting single items and if you can't help it, interpreting items out of context. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that novice snoopers make, is they go into a place and they see something. They say, oh, here's a collection of, you know, Russian dolls or Russian figurines or something, and they say, okay, what does that mean? If they have this, it must mean something. And I wish the world were that simple, but it just isn't, because it turns out there are many reasons why you might have a collection of Russian dolls. Maybe it was a gift. Maybe you're giving it to somebody else. Maybe it was left over. There are many different sentimental reasons. Maybe you have it because you're at Russian heritage. Maybe you just like the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the key things to do was to combine things, and that's what I did when I opened this box. So I looked at the evidence that told me it was a male. So there was clearly some items in there from the sort of medicine cabinet showing me that it was a male. And although that might seem, oh, well, duh, that's obvious, knowing it is a male helps you interpret what else is there, because there are different norms for males and females. So you could interpret the existence of then the face cream that this person had in conjunction with knowing it's a male tells you, okay, that this person using this face cream, that's less the norm than it would be for females. I deduced some sort of very basic stuff about the person, his general age group, and his ethnicity, and that I thought he was probably gay too, and it turned out that he was. Now, a lot of that, of course, is using stereotypes, and stereotypes, also play a very interesting role in snooping, the extent that they can take you in the right direction, they can also take you in the wrong direction too.
Right. Let's go next to Brad from La Crosse. Hi, Brad.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
An analysis of when we have my wife and I have three children, and mm-hmm. the toy box gets dumped over in the living room, and is that a reflection on personality when we just sometimes have a hard time getting everything all cleaned up after they dump out their toy box, and the effort to get it all put back in and have the kids help, what sort of personality are we looking at when we have a hard time?
Yeah. Well, again, one has to look at the norms, and this is something that's crucial. So this is another one of the tips when we're getting people to snoop and look around. I was recently invited to go into some offices of a newspaper and went in there. But before looking at the ones that I was actually assessing, I went in and looked at a whole bunch of other ones too, just so I could get the norms for that organization. Now, I don't have kids myself, so, I'm not good at judging those particular norms. So what I would do is say, well, is this, unusual for having kids, of this age and so on? And if it was, so if they are more messy and more, it suggests that they may be lower on this trait, this conscientiousness trait, which is sort of this air traffic controller dimension. So it would suggest they'd be lower on that and more impulsive. So that is these are the sorts of things that we often think about as being these sort of frontal lobe traits, things about thinking, planning, being time oriented, being time focused, and so on. So they might be not so high on those dimensions. Mm. Is that consistent with your appraisal?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brad.
Well, thank mm-hmm. you.
Sure. Bye. Let's go to David from Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David.
Yes. I I like things neat and stuff, but if they get too messy, then I just let them go totally. And then the thing about the hoarding, when I'm financially well off, I, always good at recycling and reusing stuff, but, I get rid of stuff. But when I am not in good finances, I tend to hoard on to things. I don't know. What does that say about me?
in terms of the neat stuff, that would be an interesting thing. Is I for the reason I mentioned earlier is that part of having a different personality means that you see the world differently. So I would, when you describe yourself as being neat and messy, which you may, I would also want to get other people's opinions on that too, because we're notoriously bad at judging ourselves on these, because having these different personalities actually affects how we judge the world, what counts as neat and messy. And I think one of the interesting things here is you're drawing a distinction between you're being neat at one moment and then you become less messy. Now, you probably do fluctuate, but it may be that you don't fluctuate as much as you think you do. I often get people talking about, they say, well, I'm very neat at work, but very messy at home. And indeed, there probably is some difference there because the behaviors are different in those spaces, and the spaces probably reflect those differences in behaviors and outlooks and values and so on. But the difference isn't often as much as we would imagine. So you were saying, could you just clarify that again, David? You're saying you're very messy when you're financially better off. Is that right?
Oh no, I would say I tend to hoard when I'm not financially hoard on to things.
But, yeah, yeah.
So neat and messy, either it's neat, there's not half messy with me. Either it's messy or it's neat.
So one of the forms of that is sort of the equivalent of people who go through these great purges, right? I need to, and that's what I am too. And that would again depend on your lifestyle. So some people have this pattern where they get overwhelmed, and then when it gets to a certain stage, they don't do anything, and then they can no longer work, and then they have to tidy up. And that's quite a common pattern we see in people's personality there, which shows that they're unlike a true messy person because they surely value it. They value the orderliness, and so in interacting with those people, and it sounds like in interacting with you, that would affect sorts of things that I might appeal to when I was talking to you. But yeah, so your pattern here seems to be actually a very sensible one. It's a mini hoarding in times of plenty, right? Or is it the opposite?
It's the opposite.
It's a scarcity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That's, I guess, a different strategy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for the call. I find this interesting. Talk more about it. Research has shown that people don't often want to be seen as positively as possible. They actually want to be seen by others as they see themselves, even if that means being seen negatively.
Yeah, that's right. There's been quite a lot of research on this. It's in the field. It's known as the research of self-verification. And I think, you know, we often assume that, because lots of the things that we put up in our spaces are not just these reflections of our everyday behavior, but they're also images we want to send to other people. They're identity claims, statements we deliberately make to others. And I think it's very easy to assume that when somebody is making such a statement, that what they are doing is they are deliberately trying to create a false impression. But this research that you mentioned here really has shown that actually that's not true nearly as often as we might think it is. Very often, we're actually trying to get others to see us as we see ourselves. And in fact, research has shown that people tend to be happier, healthier, more productive when they can do that, even if it means getting people to see people be seen negatively. There's some really interesting studies done actually where I work by my colleagues at the University of Texas, where they found that people with low self-esteem, they were more distraught after winning a game, because we could manipulate, the researchers could manipulate who won and who lost. And when people low self-esteem, when they won this game in competition with somebody else, they were more distraught and disturbed than when they lost, because that wasn't consistent with how they saw themselves.
Oh, that's amazing. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Rob from Couture. Hello, Rob. No, I'm sorry. I pushed the wrong button. Let's go to...
Hello?
Let's go to Rob. Hey, Rob.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, how are you?
Fine show. Well, what I do is I live in kind of a small place. It's kind of cluttered, I guess you'd say, but I know where things are, or most of the time I do. But I find the thing that I collect and have surrounding me, the majority is, I've probably recorded over 2,000 programs from Wisconsin Public Radio or Alternative Radio or TUC Radio, Alternative Radio programs, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now, a lot of political things, and or books fall into my hands that are of significance historically or politically, and you know, mm-hmm. at garage sales or at library sales, and it just mm-hmm. you know, I collect them and read them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not all of them all the way through, because I get distracted by the programs I record, because I listen to them. That's why I record them or share them with friends.
Mm-hmm. 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 And are they very meticulously organized, the program?
Well, I always put dates on them. And then
yeah, yeah.
And not always who did it, but then I am forced to listen to it again, so I then put on who did it.
Well, it sounds like I suspect you have higher judgments for being, when you say you're cluttered. I imagine you're a lot less cluttered than you say you are, because I think you probably have higher standards for this person. But again, it sounds like you are somebody who is, again, meticulous, responsible. You know, so again, this would be you know, I would be very happy if I was hiring you to do all kinds of things that require people to be high on this air traffic controller factor. yes, you have a very active frontal lobe.
Thank you.
Well, make your day, Rob. You can use that forever in your life. I have a very active frontal lobe. Yeah, thanks very much for your call.
Very interesting space, it sounds like, though.
Yeah, it does. Let's talk more about music. We haven't said very much. What can you tell from a person's iPod?
Yeah, well, music is very interesting because there are a number of different things you can learn from it. You can learn not only what the songs are, and so some of our research has shown that some traits are associated with people who tend to prefer certain genres. Again, of course, these are generalizations. So you can learn which genres people listen to. You can also look at, of course, is how well is it organized. So, you know, if it's on iPod, has it been meticulously organized and rated and so on? That again, will tell us about this conscientiousness factor. But you can also look at broad characteristics of it. Does the person, even across genres, have uplifted music or even voices? Extroverts, I think, are a really interesting group of people, because extroverts just like other people. So you take extroverts, you know, and mention a party, and that excites them, whereas an introvert, the thought of going to parties really actually very makes them anxious, the thought of being with all those people. So extroverts like people, so they have spaces that are particularly inviting. They have photos of other people. They tend to, you know, often them with other people engaged in some sort of lively activity. But they also, even their liking of people is even reflected in the music they like, to the extent they like sort of lively, energetic music. But they also like, they just like voices. They like people so much that even music with voices in is preferred by extroverts. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Warren from Madison. Hi, Warren.
Hi. I've had the experience through the past 25 years. I've been a professional mover in the household business. I'm what they call a packer, where I go in and I go through all the contents of the home, inventory it, then put it in boxes, and then it's amazing the amount of things I've seen. No two houses are the same. No people's organizational structure is the same. Everybody's individual, but there's also common things that everybody has. Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, we'd go in with a crew of three or four movers, and we'd all pick a bedroom. I'd go in the basement or the kitchen, and then at lunch break, we'd sit around and say, hey, what do you know about these people? And
yeah.
They'd do like their minute or 2 minutes, say, this guy's a lawyer, this guy's such and such, you know, his second marriage, you know, the granny's coming over, this is what she looks like. It's amazing the amount of information you can learn from people just like going through their stuff. And let me tell you something, I've gone through some stuff.
I would love to be part of that conversation. That sounds like so rich and interesting for the sorts of stuff I do. I'd love to just sit in and listen. It sounds really terrific. Now, Warren, do you tend to find generally sort of, even though you've done different spaces, do you tend to find that people come up with sort of similar appraisals, or are they quite different from going through different spaces as the same person?
It's really varied. There are patterns. Mm-hmm. There are companies. I don't want to mention names, but certain companies that we moved corporately, and all the people had a commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of interesting. And as far as for personal organization, it seems like the engineers and doctors are the least organized at home, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Like their home's a shambles. Not to pin one, you know, occupation as being just a mess, but some people... Literally, you could tell that they moved stuff and organized it before we got there. Literally, yeah. People. Some people would have their everything in alphabetical order and their pants and everything pressed.
Oh my gosh!
Then other times we'd move brilliant people in their field, and there would literally be just piles of stuff on the floor that we kind of go through and organize and kind of help them move. And I've got enough for probably two books, so
yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, Warren. You like what you do too, which is interesting. You've taken it to another level.
Yeah, it's been an experience. I've kind of moved on from that industry because corporations aren't moving people as much anymore, but the stories are still there, and people still call me on a regular basis. Hey, you got to move me again, you know. So it's interesting. Everybody has stuff. Keeps me in business, though. If people didn't have stuff to move, then I wouldn't have had a job for the past 25 years.
Well, I think it shows, Warren, how important our stuff is. You know what? You know, not only just from, you know, the financial point of view. I mean, often it would probably be cheaper to say, okay, I'm going to leave everything behind and get some new stuff when I get there. But, you know, how rich and strong our psychological connections are to the items in our spaces. And
right.
I think that's one thing that's, you know, sadly been neglected by a lot of psychological research, is really not really taking account for how tightly people are connected to the places in which they live and work.
Mm-hmm. How true. Thanks very much for the call. We'll take more phone calls in just one moment. We're speaking this hour with the author of Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You, Professor Sam Gosling, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Texas at Austin, and he is the recipient of the American Psychological Association's Distinguished Scientific Award for Early Career Contribution. One line is open if you'd like to join our conversation, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. And, oh, yeah, you can use the email, too, and that's talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go back to phone calls for Professor Sam Gosling. Our next caller is Will from Milwaukee. Hi, Will.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I am terrific. I was just wondering if the professor has ever experienced relatively bare homes where people don't seem to care so much about stuff. They got their basic necessities, maybe a few collector's items, and then it's pretty bare. That's kind of how my house is. I really don't have much stuff. I'm rarely home. The stuff I do have, my most prized possessions are birds' nests and animal heads, skulls that I've found walking around in the wilderness, camping, and things like that. And I was wondering what he thought about that.
Yeah, I think that bare spaces, homes, and offices are very interesting. Again, they reveal the important tip of narrowing it down, because there could be different reasons for it. So sometimes a bare space reflects an introvert, because introverts tend to want less stimulation. So I would, you know, then look for other evidence to see if the person is introverted. You know, look in the music collection, or some places don't have much decor, but then you'd see, well, it's not an introvert because the person is has created a space where they're inviting interaction and so on. So that might rule out being introversion. Other reasons why people have less stuff is some people are just simply less sentimental than others. The very, very sentimental people, they form connections to all kinds of objects and fill their spaces with those. Another clue that it can be, and again, you'd need to combine it with other information, especially in organizational context, is commitment. So a lot of people may be not committed to staying in a place, so they make it less comfortable, they move in less strongly. Or at work context, too, another reason why some people have bare spaces is because they for them it's important to have a very sharp distinction between, say, work and home, and so they don't bring a lot of their personal items in and display them. They really want to keep those worlds quite apart, and so you'd need to look at different areas to do this. You know, looking at your space, Will, it sounds like, you know, that there isn't much there. So it might be that you actually, you know, sort of don't want a lot of sort of external stimulation, but you do like these sorts of reminders of of your walks and nature and so on, and a sort of very contemplative person and think about things a lot. You know, the activities in the head rather than out buzzing around, interacting with people all the time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Here's an interesting email. Has the professor been able to observe any generalization, any general trends over people's life cycles?
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting, yes. I mean, because we do know that personality changes over lifestyle and certain traits. There are certain sort of normal things. People tend to become nicer. They become more agreeable. They tend to become more conscientious over time, too. So you do see these general things. But more or less, people stay generally the same. Now, of course, what we've been talking about with these big five are these sort of general behavioral elements to us. These are what we call personality traits. But other important parts of our personality are our values and our goals and our roles. Clearly, those things change over time. The interests and values of a teenager or somebody in their 20s, they go through very, very typical patterns where they might change. And the deepest part of personality, something we haven't yet talked much about, is identity, this deep sense of self, of who we are, which is very tied into a story, our life story of how we came from being, how our roots played into our current self, and how that projects forward. Even if the story we tell about ourselves isn't true, if we want to know somebody, it's crucial to feel we understand how they see their life story.
Mm-hmm. Leah is next from Green Bay. Hi, Leah.
I live with someone who's a brilliant scientist, and he insists that the only things that exist are the things he can see. it's hard for him to file things away.
Yeah.
I wonder what you thought about that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I haven't actually come across that before. And so, is there nothing in the files at all?
There's some, but then if he ever does get to filing, then later on he complains that it's impossible to find it. But when it's out on the floor, he does find it. I mean, he does, but it's...
Eventually,
because
all the other things. We just ran out of space. It probably wouldn't tell you anything more about the person than you already know from looking at the space, but it does show you, again, how this very unique and idiosyncratic sort of personality style is reflected in the space where you might not get to know it some other way, just talking to this person. Is the person sort of an impulsive person?
No.
No, right.
No, he's not. He's very deliberate.
Yeah.
But isn't he upset by the chaos
in the place?
Find it when he wants it.
Is it chaotic or is it orderly, this everything?
It's confined to a room.
Or
else. Well, it's just a little bit of a challenge for me because I keep saying, well, I can help you put this in files, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And you have a high need for filing, so you have a higher need for order. Mm-hmm.
I'm not that orderly myself, but this is beyond me.
I think these conditions where people live together are really interesting and can cause a lot of when people have these different personalities and they get played out in the space, it can be a really end up being quite a serious cause for difficulties in relationships, when there are very, very sort of severe differences in what feels comfortable to people. And that's one of the things that this architect who I interviewed for the book, Chris Travis, has done, is he will often he'll find out how people use space, but more importantly, what space means to people and why they do the things they do, and come up with architectural solutions
that
will often be very helpful in easing relationships. He says it's much easier to redesign one's home than to redesign one's mate.
Yeah, interesting. One more. I've just been through this myself, and it really changes your perception about stuff. Shelley writes that she's been cleaning out her parents' house after they passed away, and it's been depressing. When push comes to shove, no one wanted most of it. That's true of my dad's house as well. Mm-hmm. I look at my stuff that way now. Who else but me would want it? Probably no one. It's all just visual noise.
Right, and I think it really shows you, you know, we when we think about objects and we buy objects and we arrange them, the sort of the standard idea for them is that they're functional. Oh, we did this for a purpose. But really the fact that we form such tight connections to them that aren't felt by other people shows you that really the objects are actually psychological. They contain meaning for us. They allow us to express ourselves, and that's why somebody else can't just simply take them on, other than, you know, making it a connection to the person who had them before.
Right. What an interesting hour and book. Thank you so much, Professor Gosling, for being with us.
Oh, not at all. Thanks for chatting.
Mm-hmm. Professor Sam Gosling, the book is Snoop, What Your Stuff Says About You. It has just been published by Basic Books, and he is an associate professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. His work covered widely, including by the New York Times, Psychology Today, NPR, and Good Morning America, and his research featured in Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to John Anderson for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks, everybody, for all of your calls and for listening. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.